SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three. We're about 10, 12 minutes in, and I've been anxious to get an opportunity to visit with Dan Waits, who's the executive director of the Racetrack Chaplaincy nationwide. You heard from Humberto Chavez a couple of weeks ago in New York, and Dan can provide a more national outlook. Dan, first of all, hope you and family and staff and everybody you're overseeing and in contact with is holding up okay.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Steve. Obviously, it's been a lot, you know, to go through this time, but everybody, you know, at the very least, their world's been disrupted, but at the most, there's been some loss and some uncertainty, but we're doing okay. Thanks for the wishes.
Well, and of course, it's Easter Monday, too, and you know, the spring holiday season between Passover and Easter. In a very much, I don't know if you want to call it truncated, but you know, people had to observe in a more limited fashion. Dan, give us a feel for how things are going nationwide, and I'm sure that you know you're in contact with the ministers and you know with the teams nationwide on a regular basis anyway, but under these circumstances undoubtedly you know it there must be multiple contacts a day with all the chaplains.
Yeah, there is. You know, never have so many chaplains used Zoom. but they've adapted amazingly. What we've tried to do as a national staff is to support them on the local level. That's our mission. That's our job, is to support the physical, the social, the educational, spiritual, and emotional needs of the horse racing industry. That's what we do. And the chaplains have been amazing. Omar Aracena also works here in the national office. And we've kind of, between he and I, we've been on multiple phone calls, multiple emails, texts, everything else you can imagine, any type of way, to make sure that we're monitoring the situation across the industry. When this thing first happened, it was very fluid, and I'm really proud of the industry partners because we were all communicating together as to where horses were going to land, where people were going to eventually, you know, land and that type of thing, because track managements were making decisions really quickly. So communication's been really important. I can, you know, tell you right now that the chaplains, I'm so proud of them. I'm humbled by the work that they've done. They truly are still accomplishing the mission, just doing it in a much different way. And you had mentioned about Easter and Passover, and you know, they've adapted in that regard as well. There was multiple services that were being held on Facebook Live and on YouTube, and doing it that way, you know, is not nearly what we're accustomed to. So the shepherd is really supposed to be with the flock and be amongst the people, and so this whole way that we're doing our mission has been really a tribute to the chaplains and to the councils and the volunteers and the staffs and everybody that works within the chaplaincy. I'm so proud of them. And again, you know, under these uncertain times, they've majorly adapted.
Well, and give everybody a feel for how many chaplains operate you know, throughout the country.
Yeah, so we're right now, RTCA as a whole has a chaplain or, you know, some type of chaplaincy locations across the nation. Some of them, you know, the majority of them are is the chaplain at Ocala. And so he's covering, you know, 800 farms, and that whole community down there, and his team and his chaplaincy is doing an amazing job down there. They, wow. When all this hit, we don't think about the you know, we think about the physical needs of the food and the clothing and that type of thing, but we don't, you know, think about, from his standpoint, he had to think about computers for homeschooling for all the kids that were down there, and think about how they were going to start taking their courses online and that type of thing. So, you know, our number one thing when all this happened, we were, like, again, we were trying to figure out where the needs were. And it's easy to take care of the physical needs, but there's also an impact emotionally. There's an impact about the separation and the uncertainty. You know, for instance, Chaplain Eli Hernandez at Santa Anita. I mean, you know, Eli, I just cannot speak enough about him and Martha and his wife and the team down there at Santa Anita and what they've gone through, you know, in the last year and a half of just being able to minister to those folks. And I've never met a more upbeat pastor, chaplain than Eli, as far as he goes in every day and loves on people. And it's just been a real tribute to a lot of that. And I've got a host of other chaplains that are doing the same type of work all across the United States and Puerto Rico and beyond. So, again, they're just meeting needs.
How how stressed, you know, even under the best of circumstances, there's always a demand, and the fundraising aspect, you know, is always part of the organization's, you know, obligations. How stressed is the team, and what do you need the most right now, Dan? How can you know, stakeholders and fans and horse players help the chaplaincy?
Yeah, obviously the need is great. We were blessed enough to have some industry partners that reached out to us initially because, you know, food banks were getting low. Obviously, you know, you had talked to Humberto Chavez in New York, and all of their resources were hit very hard. I mean, that was kind of the epicenter. And so, but the Jockey Club, Safety Net has stepped up, TCA, HBPA, Breeders' Cup, HBPA, you name it. They've all stepped up and helped fill the short-term gap. What we're kind of focusing on now is the long-term and try to think about where the needs are. What our board did from the onset is the national office, you know, throughout our giving, we actually give back to the local chaplaincies, and we're really good stewards of our money. I'm, you know, we're really very frugal and try to be and hit where the needs are. But this situation was so fluid, is that we put a mechanism in place on the national level that said, if you know of a need or really feel led to really help an individual chaplain at an individual park, you can give to the national office, but make sure in the memo column that you put where you want that donation to go. Now, that's really unusual for us because, obviously, you know, we still get the monies out to the individual local level, but we knew that a lot of people wanted to give to the, you know, to Dwight Brown at Evangeline or to Donald Stover at Sunland. We knew that people really wanted to get it to the local level. So on our website, rtcanational.org, that's rtcanational.org/give, you can donate there. That's the quickest and most efficient way, is to donate online. And if you put something in the memo column that you really know of a need, say at Remington or Emerald Downs or Turk Paradise or whatever, you know, what we want to do is we want to try to get those monies to where people feel like they are doing the most good. Now we'll make that decision on their behalf, and obviously the national office helps, you know, all 47 different of our facilities, and we try to make sure that they're supplied, and we'll make sure that the monies get to where they're needed, the support gets to where it's needed. But we want to make sure too is that at this point, that the local level is where you know, they have to resupply their food banks, they have to resupply. They have to feed, track kitchens when they started closing. You know, a lot of the chaplains had to step up and make sure that people, you know, had daily meals and that type of thing, whatever. They've just done a host of things. So if you give, I promise you, it will get to where it's needed.
Well, so much right now, you know, there's so many areas of demand and need, and I sense that the industry is responding, brilliantly, Dan. From every level, there's been no panic either. It really does feel like, the sport overall has, so many occasions of stress and crisis that, and I've said this a couple of times over the last few weeks, that we feel as an industry, I think, uniquely qualified to deal with something that is overwhelming, really very, I think, in a lot of ways, so many different, businesses and industries.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. It's really been, has risen to the occasion. And, this is a family.
Yeah, we lost Dan for a minute earlier, too.
Perseverance is the single thread that runs through all this. We're told in Scripture that perseverance, builds strength and character and hope. And that's what we've seen. The storm has been weathered quite well because I think there's been that long-term perseverance sewed in.
Well said. We lost you there for a minute, Dan. But before we go, not at all. Let's give everybody. I'm gonna tweet it out too. But for those of you that are listening and don't follow on Twitter, RTCA National, Race Track Chaplaincy of America National, RTCA National. .org. There is the drop-down menu in the upper right-hand corner, but for ease, rtcanational.org/give, and it'll be very well received. And I suppose if there's people listening that are in a position, if there's a racetrack community close to you, if you've got a way, if you've got maybe you're a restaurant, maybe you're some sort of a food service operation, whatever it might be that, could somehow help the food bank side of things, or any kind of donations that could assist the families involved here and the individuals. We encourage it. And if you get a hold of Dan and anybody at RTCA or the local chaplain, they'll be so appreciative.
Absolutely.
Dan Waits, I'm sorry that this is the occasion that gets you a visit here. I mean, we've talked before, but I thought it was important. And if there's anything that you need communicated during the situation, do not hesitate. We'll probably check in with you again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. Appreciate all you do.
Dan Waits, everybody, and RTCA, the Racetrack Chaplaincy of America, that just does unbelievable work. And as I've said many times, and as I discussed with Umberto a couple of weeks ago, my opportunity to get to know Salty Roberts and to understand, what this organization, its roots and its incredible reach and its incredible dedication, and they don't get nearly enough attention as an outlet for you to help the backstretch community, the racetrack chaplaincy. We're going to stay here. A very difficult conversation to have this morning. I saw that really well-known New York sports photographer Anthony Cossey had died from coronavirus. And I first reached out to Skip Dickstein, and I said, "Skip, didn't Anthony shoot Belmonts?" And he said, "Oh, my God, yes." He said, and everybody in the photography, in the photog bullpen, they all admired him. And and loved him. And then it occurred to me that Anthony Stabile of NYRA and HRRN, Anthony in all his years at the New York Post, and I'm going to actually guess that Anthony's time at the Post coincided almost exactly with Anthony Causey's arrival on the photography staff. And it's a pleasure to have Anthony Stabile join us even under these circumstances. Anthony, Buona Pasqua. I hope you had a lovely Easter, as much as it could be. Thanks for joining me.
It was a wonderful Easter. Mom did a great job again, Steve. Happy holidays to you. Happy Passover and Easter to you and the family. And it was great until about 10 o'clock last night when the news started to filter in. Anthony got to the Post a few years before me. Anthony started in 94 on the photo desk. I started in 99. But it was a natural friendship. A couple of 20-somethings working for one of the biggest newspapers in the world. One kid from Brooklyn. Anthony was from Brooklyn. I was from Howard Beach, still in Howard Beach in Queens. So hit it off right away. Knew the same neighborhood people, if you know what I mean. And, we kind of hit it off right away and stayed friends. I'm not going to tell you. We saw each other every week, but stayed friends for 20 years. I've been gone from the Post since 2004. Stayed friends for 20 years. And I tweeted this out last night. You're not going to have too many people in your life when all said and done that you're only going to have good memories of and have had good times with. I don't care if it's your parents, your significant other. I don't have any kids, but your kids, at some point, they're going to frustrate you or aggravate you, and maybe you don't mean it, but it's going to happen in that moment. I rack my brain. I can't think of a time where I can remember that about Anthony, and that's pretty rare.
I heard the same thing essentially from Skip Dickstein, and it's notable, you know, as big a photographer as he was for the team sports and you know, Yankees, Mets, Jets, Giants, Rangers, Nets, the Islanders, Knicks. He was just adored and really respected. I mean, Skip said it's only in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years that he got to really know him. But he would come out to Belmont and enjoyed, you know, shooting the big day. And Skip said every year he would invite him to go for for an Italian dinner, and Skip is heartbroken that he didn't have the opportunity, and the opportunity won't happen. And the outpouring of affection for him and the respect of his talent with the lens is just overwhelming.
It's amazing. You're going to see, and you'll see this in the days to come, if you're on social media, and you know, it's almost like they play the game six degrees of Kevin Bacon. Well, in the sports world, it's 6 degrees of Anthony Causey. You're eventually going to get back to somebody who knows who knew Anthony. You're going to see a lot of pictures of him taking pictures. Now, that makes very little sense, but his colleagues respected him so much and knew the relationships. He had a guy that was showing my mom and my stepfather Pete this morning some of Anthony's best work. And of course, he knows the two most famous ones are Derek Jeter hitting the "Thank God I'm a Yankee" sign, walking out of the clubhouse, and Mariano Rivera coming out of the bullpen. And Anthony is behind Mariano taking a shot of the sold-out Yankee Stadium, taking pictures of Mariano coming out of the pen. Those are probably his two most iconic shots. But there have been so many shots this morning. There's one, and this one really got me this morning when I looked at it, of him on the ground at either the Garden or the Barclays Center with Kobe Bryant sitting next to him. Kobe obviously just went for a rebound or a dunk, and he fell near Anthony, and they're sitting there, and somebody thought to snap that picture. There's a great picture, I think it's from Jeter's last game, of Jeter in the on-deck circle and Anthony squatting down to take the picture of him. Somebody took the picture of Anthony taking that picture. So that's the kind of guy he was. People, in the midst of doing their jobs, wanted to make sure they honored Anthony at the same time. And the funniest part about that was, if you went through his Facebook page, I mean, and I'm biased because he was a good friend. Not too many people had a better eye than Anthony Causey. There's no work on his Facebook page. It's all his wife, Romina, and his kids, Johnny and Mia. He named his son after his father, and both of his parents are still around. So that's the kind of guy he was. As great as he was at what he did, and as respected as he was, to have his peers make him the subject on more than one occasion, he never flaunted that or gloated about that. His life, he loved his work. He loved his family that much more.
Talking about Anthony Causey, 48, and a Corona victim, the New York Post most celebrated sports photographer, and Anthony Stabile, you know, worked with him and then, you know, became friends from that point on. How much, you know, he wasn't, you know, huge with racing, but plenty of his Belmont shots ended up on the back cover, and right, I mean, almost every Belmont he would have a, you know, then the interior shots, and there was certainly a point, you know, going back, I had Ed Fontaine last week, Anthony, and you know, there was certainly a point when the Post would cover, you know, the racing up, inside out, multiple pages.
Please, we had six pages when I first started the Post.
Yep.
1 year till I graduated St. John's, May 17th, 1998. I started the Post May 17th, 1999. We had six pages. We covered every racetrack you could possibly think of. My first set of rated selections would be Golden Gate, Delaware, soup to nuts. And we did the same thing on race day coverage. You know, I remember Breeders' Cup 01. I sat, and like I was like, who the hell am I? I'm sitting with Ed Fontaine, Ray Kerrison, and Wally Matthews. Who am I? And Anthony was there, you know?
Yeah.
And in the years, so I was gone from the Post 15, I'm gone from the Post 16 years in July. I'd get a text, yo, cuz, coming out to shoot this week, hope to see you. And we'd always meet, and me and Anthony would always meet up. So I'm at the Belmont Draws, which have been at Citi Field the last couple of years. My annual sojourn that didn't happen this year down to the Fountain of Youth. Not the real family, the one at Gulfstream Park. I'd like to find that, especially with this quarantine, the grays are really coming out now, Steve. The Fountain of Youth at Gulfstream Park, we'd head down to Gulfstream, and I would go to spring training every year. 2 years I went to Port St. Lucie, the home of my beloved New York Mets, and then 1 year I was in West Palm. They were taking on the Astros. The 2 years at St. Lucie, I'd be sitting, and my buddy Ray would always hook us up with good seats. We'd be sitting three, four rows off the plate. I'd hear, yo, cuz. And I'd look up, and he'd get me, and Anthony would be right there. And he'd have his picture taken. Like, the 1 year I didn't even tell him I was coming down. He'd always scan the crowd. Saw me, came around, gave me a big hug. I hadn't seen him for a few years at that point. But it was like, that's what he loved to do the best, too. One of the things I'll always remember him for, he was always smiling. And he never smiled bigger than when he got you off guard with his camera. Like, if you'd hear click, 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 and you'd look up, and there he'd be with his big, goofy smile on his face. You know, sometimes I'd be sitting at my desk with a half a salami sandwich hanging out of my mouth. I mean, he would absolutely love that he got me that way. But then it would turn into a 15-minute, all right, now hold the salami sandwich this way. Now hide the fact that you've already eaten half this thing because you're a gavone, and make it look like the sandwich is cold. Like, that's how he was. That's how he was. He was amazing, and he was, I don't want to say he was a perfectionist, but if he was going to do his job, he wanted it done meticulously, and he wanted his shot. And sometimes that would mean 60, 70 shots. And you'd say to yourself, how different could these things be? That's just how he was. He was, and like I said, you know, we all have our vanity to a degree. He didn't. And the other, he was a student of martial arts. He loved his karate. And it was, you know, he was the ultimate Karate Kid, like Mr. Miyagi teaching, you know, why do you train for karate so I don't have to fight? That was Anthony. But he loved the discipline. He loved getting his body moving with the karate. He was, but the last guy in the world that you were worried about using karate on you would have been Anthony Corsi.
Too sad and so unfair. Just 48, and I know that the, you know, the racetrack veteran Photogs, represented by Skip Dickstein, already voiced how much he's going to be missed, and then by personal friends that really know him well, like you, Anthony. I appreciate this. How you holding up overall?
Yeah, doing all right. You know, Causey was the first person I know that passed away from this, really. I didn't know Martin Zapata, that worked for Tom and Maggie Morley. Obviously, you've seen the face around the barn area for 100 years, but didn't know him. I had a bunch of kids who I went to school with, a bunch of guys my age, three, in fact, who I literally went to fourth, fifth, sixth grade with, more guys I know 30 years. Thankfully, they've all recovered from COVID-19. But, yeah, you know, smoke my cigars, play my horses. We're still on, like you. You know, listen to you. Listen to the show when I can. We're on Wednesday. We're still on Wednesday through Friday. Mike's on Saturday morning with the Equine Forum, so over at HRRN. And, yeah, business as usual. Just trying to get back. I miss being at the track. I miss calling races. I miss seeing all my friends and the horses. So it's crazy times. I blame, you know, I'm very angry at the Jetsons. I was promised a much different 2020. This is not the world that we were supposed to have. Robotic maids and supposed to be living in skylines all the way up in the sky. This is not what we were promised, Steve. Not what we were promised.
Well, I appreciate you know what you are doing, and with my man Grabowski, you know the work in the afternoons, and bringing everybody the racing action, and back soon enough when Naira can resume racing as well, and I'll be back doing the prattles with and talking horses with Andy and. We're all.
I never thought I'd miss Andy Serling as much as I do. I know people out there think. I know people probably out there think that's a line, but that's a God's honor. We haven't done Talking Horses now, wow, 5.5 weeks, and I miss every part of it. I really, really do. But yeah, we get to do the races during the week. I can say this. I never thought I'd say. You know, take a break here on Red Brand Radio. Coming up next, the sixth from Will Rogers Downs. I never thought those words would ever come out of my mouth, but they have on three consecutive Wednesdays now. So we'll keep plugging along. Like I said, you're doing a fantastic job. I know a lot of people, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I have quite a few friends and quite a few listeners out there who message on social media, or the ones that I'm more friendly with will text and just be like, you guys are saving my sanity. So, I mean, at least we're doing, you know, we're not doing anywhere near what the front line and the first responders are doing, but at least we're providing a little bit of a distraction, some knuckleheaded entertainment. And I'll tell you what, Bobby Newman's been doing the shows with me, the afternoon shows. Nice. The guy's on fire. I think he like knows the results. He has a crystal ball or something. He's been on fire, so we've been making some money too. It's actually been okay.
Nice. Well, stay healthy and be careful, Anthony. I can't thank you enough for this, because I knew it would be important to have Anthony Causey recognized, and he appreciated racing and
yeah.
Appreciated.
He loved coming out to the track. He didn't get to come out as much as he liked, but he loved coming out. I remember when he was shooting the funny side. He was, when I was writing the columns for the Post as funny side, he was my guy. So he was out there with me a lot, and we had a good time doing that. There, I don't ever do this, Steve. There's a GoFundMe page that was set up for Anthony. So if you go to GoFundMe and just type in his name, there is a GoFundMe page up there. He leaves a wife and two precious kids. I think Johnny's 5 or 6 at this point. Mia's turning 3 in May. So, yeah, if you can do anything, you can just type his name into the search at GoFundMe, and there's a page. I've never promoted a GoFundMe page in my life, but this one is very important to me.
I will circulate it, too. $52,000 already raised, and Anthony Stabile, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the chance to pay homage to my friend. Rest in peace, cuz.
Well said. Let's take our last break of the morning. Steve Anderson is going to join us from the Daily Racing Forum to close out this busy Monday. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Where's your
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. 15 minutes to close out what's been a busy Monday, and it was a busy weekend for Steve Anderson, who can find news and racing under any pebble, stone, rock, continent. It doesn't matter. Australia, Japan, Los Al for the quarters, you name it, and Steve is covering it. We told you about the Australian racing, the championships, day two at Randwick on Friday night into Saturday morning. Steve Anderson joins us now. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. I just spent some time looking at Wednesday night's or Wednesday's action in Australia, where they run at Randwick this week again, but they have an infield course called the Kensington course, not the one they used for the championships the preceding two Saturdays, but it's as if Belmont or Saratoga had a meeting only on the infield turf course, and that had its own brand, so to speak. So it's called the Kensington race course at Randwick, and that's Wednesday in Australia, or late Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning in the United States across our time zone. So that's going to be one of the big cards on Wednesday in Australia. There's like five cards on Wednesday in Australia.
Well, we're quickly trying to bring everybody up to speed, especially if they're night owls, and we'll talk about the results from Friday night, because those were terrific top level races, and there wasn't a ton of of big mutuals. There was a couple of spots, and certainly if you were behind Glenn Boss, you did well. Before we do that, before we talk about it, Steve, give everybody an update about the TOC meeting that happened on Friday. I previewed it slightly. We had Janine Sahadi visit as well as Rick Hammerly, but tell us what the big takeaways were.
Well, they're working towards a meeting coming up this weekend between San Diego officials and the Los Angeles County Board of Health, Public Health, and the track is hoping to convince those people to allow them to resume racing in the next couple of weeks. So the TOC's teleconference last Friday was a 75-minute discussion on that and other issues that are facing California racing right now while things are disrupted since March the 27th. So it's now been, they've lost 9 racing days at Santa Anita. However, they may not have been able to run these last few days because it's been soaking wet, and there was no training this morning at Santa Anita on the main track, for example. I mean, no timed workouts. So there's been some disruption here because of Mother Nature, but they're hoping that they can convince the county officials to allow them to resume racing with strict protocols in place, no spectators, of course, and try to get some program developed where they can do that for a little while, hopefully. You know, they're supposed to get back to racing here hopefully soon and then run through June 21. So there'll be some racing at Santa Anita soon. We just don't know when. Hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later.
How much of the situation across the street at the Arboretum was brought up? The fact that the Arboretum's open for patrons and the self-contained, no spectator racing opportunity is being denied.
And it was brought up in a measure of frustration by officials who are somewhat angered and jealous that facility is open to the public while the race course cannot even operate behind without spectators. So yes, it's very much a hot stove subject right now as to why there seems to be an apparent double standard. So they're going to argue for a resumption of racing here pretty quick. So it's important to get something going. You know, everybody's become accustomed in the last month, 3 weeks, to watching races from home. And it's something that we can do in the short term. Otherwise, I certainly would enjoy being out there and get some revenue going for the sport for all purposes involved.
Simultaneously, Steve, you could maybe address the fact that in Orange County, whether it's Doc Allred having more sway in Orange than Santa Anita management has in L.A. County, but Doc Allred isn't being cowed by anybody.
No, and I think there's a lot of factors involved there. I think we may overstate the personalities involved and their influences, but I'm just gone onto the LA Times' website to just quote you some figures here real quick. Just coronavirus cases statewide as of this morning. 9,100 in Los Angeles, and there have sadly been 300 deaths. Orange County has 19 deaths, with 1,200 positives being reported. So it's it's less than 10% in Orange County compared to what Los Angeles has been affected by. So you're seeing very small space, widespread changes, widespread differences, rather, in
interesting
the way this outbreak has affected different areas. You know, they're running at LoSal again under strict terms, no spectators, you know, minimum staff, and things like that. So, you know, they're continuing to operate Friday through Sunday on most weeks. They took yesterday off because of Easter. But they're back at it on Friday night, the 17th. And it's the, you know, the game there has changed ever so slightly here in the last few weeks. Without Santa Anita Racing, some of these 870-yard races for quarter horses and thoroughbreds have been written to attract thoroughbred sprinters that can go, that are effective at a half mile.
Hmm.
Like, for example, a few nights ago, there was a successful evening in which they wrote races for horses that had never won at 870. Well, most of those thoroughbreds haven't run at 8-1 or run at 870. And they're, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago particularly, quarter horse 870 races were outstanding, and there was loads of quarter horses in them. But over the during this first 20 years of the century, that's died down a little bit. There haven't been as many 870 quarter horses in California, and really nationwide, it's not really very strong compared to what it used to be. But now that you're seeing a little bit more of them, but you're seeing more participation from thoroughbreds who qualify for those races than you are seeing an increase in the number of quarter horse runners. But that's what that, like on Saturday night, they had five of those races on a 9-race card, and then the last four races were down the straightaway for quarter horses, and they drew full fields in the 870s, and they had a record pick four handle, 347,000, I think it was.
Interesting.
So, you know, there was people are interested in that. They see it as basically a sprint thoroughbred race per se, and they'll support it. And that's something that works. It was 335,000, the pick four. It broke a week-old record that was 271,000. Well, that's pretty good money, no matter where you're from. It's money, good money to play into. So that's probably going to wind up being a part of the cards coming up this weekend as well. Because, you know, Jeff Mullins had a runner. Andrew Lerner had a runner. There was Jeff Metz has been involved. There's been other trainers that are based at Santa Anita that have sent horses down. Dean Pedersen won a race recently. You know, everybody's got one or two in the barn that fit those, you know, 870 yards, which are basically four furlong races. You know, it works for some horses and doesn't work for others.
We're going to revisit this going into the weekend, and I might ask you back for some handicapping once those cards are drawn for Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, they draw tomorrow for Friday, so we should get an indication by evening time as to how
interesting.
Whether that trend continues. They've also got, you know, they started their two-year-old maiden quarter horses. California's later than most circuits. You know, they've already run Paternities, and they were scheduled to run a Paternity in Louisiana. There's an $890,000 race at Remington for two-year-olds on Saturday night coming up, part of eight stakes at that track. But LoSal does it a little slower. Their emphasis is on the last of the season. So right now there's been five 300-yard maiden races for two-year-olds. And Mike Robbins has won four of them, and he had another winner on Saturday. So you'll see more of those races through the weekend as well, since loads and loads of those horses were qualifying gateworks and March and last of February and even earlier this month. So, you know, this is the time of year at Los Alamitos where the game starts to change a little bit. The two-year-olds come online. May 3rd is the kindergarten trials, the first paternity of the year. Time trials on May 3rd, final on May 17th, typically worth about $300,000 to $350,000.
Shift our gears from California and LoSal to Royal Randwick and the championships, and got about 3.5-4 minutes for a quick summary. Steve Anderson with us from the forum, and Steve loves anything international, and certainly the racing Friday night into Saturday morning was tremendous. Four grade ones, and Glenn Boss takes both the Australian Oaks and the Sydney Cup with Colette, the very good favorite. We had gotten a push from Andrew Hawkins on Toffee Tongue, and she ran very well to be second. Conti Patiro shows up again this week and turns the table on Netoyer. This came in the Legacy, and of course in the $1.2 million Queen Elizabeth. How about William Haggis for Godolphin? Ed Deb, give us a quick thought about what we saw Friday night.
Well, I enjoyed that Queen Elizabeth Stakes because I was a huge fan of that filly, Very Elegant, who ran second, and expected her to win the race, and was kind of a little disappointed that she only ran second. But the favorite was easy to like and easy to respect, so it was a very, you know, it was a very predictable 1-2 in a way. That filly, Very Elegant, is going to run hopefully in the Melbourne Cup later this year. That's been mentioned repeatedly. One thing about these Australian races they're easy to handicap. The top class horses run very often. Conte Portiero, for example, ran on April 4th in the Doncaster Mile handicap and then came back against fillies and mares 7 days later. That's not uncommon. 7-14-day layoffs are frequent. Of course, they give these horses time off in the winter and the summer on their corresponding calendars in the Southern Hemisphere. So you can build up for a short but very active and intense campaign and then know that, you know, in a few weeks' time, these Group 1 opportunities in Australia are going to give way during their winter, and you'll see these horses, you know, not come back again until the last of August, 1st of September as the spring starts there. So one thing about it is when they do run these top-class races, you don't have to wait long to come back and see the same runner again. You know, these guys, they're as much as these horses can be prepared to run four times in 6 weeks or so, or three times in 6 weeks, they do so. So in that sense, there's a lot to look forward to in that sense. And I think that makes it a very attractive product, because one thing that we don't have in this country is that frequency of racing. You know, you've got to run, work three times, and then you have another race 6 weeks later. Well, you know, it's hard to grab the public's attention when you don't have it as often. And this is one of the reasons why Saturday Australian racing is some of the best horse racing in the world, period.
Steve Anderson from the Daily Racing Form. And Steve, we're going to run out of time, but I want everybody to know that at DRF, you've got the International Racing PPs plus some other analysis PDF products that do some summarization and have some rankings. There's a lot of tools there for everybody on the international front.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to look at. I mean, we have our own little tracks, and that we follow closely, and the ones that we can claim to be experts on, and rightfully so. But sometimes it's fun to take a step back and look at the greater game around the world, whether it's hopefully the resumption of European racing in a few weeks' time at the start of May, or things here in the United States, or secondly, you know, down south, when you can watch a lot of things on simulcast now very easily.
Steve Anderson, everybody who tromps the backstretches in Southern California, of course, and has for years, but loves the international game. And I'll bring him back as often as I can to help you wade into this action. And between Steve and Dick Powell with Hong Kong and Andrew Hawkins, Australia, we're going to give you all the tools you need to stay active and to cash some tickets places other than Fonner and Will Rogers. Steve, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Talk soon, and stay safe.
Thank you very much.
Steve Anderson, everybody, who is just tremendous and does a fabulous job. If you're not following Steve, it's DRF Anderson, Anderson with an E. I think is the same way the window people spell it. As I mentioned, Fonner, 5 o'clock Eastern. Will Rogers, 2:15 Eastern, is your Monday action. I want to thank Steve, Anthony Stabile, Dan Waits, Johnny D, Brett Calhoun, Al Stahl, Casey on the board. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, later on the website for the archive and the podcast. Stay safe, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's ST.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years old and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in the state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.